Welcome to tonight's episode of Well-Rounded Corners. I'm Robert.
And I'm Ruth Ann.
And we're delighted to have with us this evening a very special guest. We'll get to him in just a moment.
I'd like to remind everyone about our website, wellroundedcorners.com. You can listen to all of our past shows there for free, and you can also find us on iTunes by searching Well-Rounded Corners. If you subscribe to us on iTunes, all new shows automatically downloaded to your computer or iPod within 48 hours of broadcast. You can also listen to us in the archives of our BBS radio page or live every other Tuesday on BBS Radio Channel 1.
Yes, and as we announced yesterday, we are delighted to have Cliff from Half Past Human with us this evening. He is the head of the WebBot Project, an organization that releases forecasts in the future or forecast the future by examining the differences over time in online shifts of language. Been following Cliff's work since 2007 and have been reading the Shape of Things to Come reports ever since he started releasing them. In speaking of WebBot's forecasts, metaphysics, or just life in general, I found Cliff to be an enlightened, intelligent, and always interesting person to listen to. And for those of you out there that have not yet had the pleasure of hearing him or about his work, I'm sure you'll agree. Cliff, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Cliff, I know you've described how the WebBots work many times before, but I'd appreciate it if you could take a few minutes and just describe the process in general for those who may not be familiar with it.
Basically, we aggregate changes in language over time in the most mundane of circumstances on the theory that all humans are basically psychic, and it leaks out in their choice of words in such things as the garden forums or, you know, cooking or pie baking or whatever. Mm-hmm. They will change language based on psychic impression. All humans are psychic. I know this to be true. Most probably don't pay that as much attention to it as they should, and many would deny that they were psychic. But nonetheless, in the aggregate, we're able to notice shifts in language patterns that really shouldn't exist because the context of the language is always basically the same. You know, how many different words do you really need to describe apple pie? Yet we keep reaching and finding new ones constantly. So there's got to be some driving force for it. What I actually found when I examined all of this was that humans, in general, if the language supports it, will internalize about 100,000 words. Many people will have more than that based on technical specifications for their jobs and so on. But about 100,000 words is your usual vocabulary. However, we hardly ever use anything close to that range. We usually restrict ourselves to about a fifth of that, about 20,000 words in any given year, and from week to week to week, maybe only 1,800 to 5,000 words in how much variance. And so it just struck me as odd when people would really hunt for new words to use in all these various mundane conversations. This was way back in the beginning of the internet in 1994. I happened to notice certain things about how language was being used, and so made a few intuitive leaps of my own. And here we are today.
Wow, that's really interesting. I would agree with you that humans are psychic. We just don't pay attention. And I'm glad you're paying attention.
Yes, well, it sort of slapped me upside the head. So it just in the nature of the work I was doing. So
right. Yeah, you were originally researching, from what I remember, the information about sun, the stock ticker symbol sun, not the sun, right? And then it kind of blossomed from there.
It was a confluence of events. I was doing very large database troubleshooting for giant firms all over the planet when they would have what were known as operational failures. They would, for instance, have giant databases that would have tens of millions of rows of data in them, and they would work, but not very well. And so they would hire people like myself to come on in and look at optimizing them or redoing their system slightly. And it was in that context of seeing vast quantities of data for phone companies and banks and car companies that I got the whole thing about the language, and one thing led to another. Now, I had the idea, and it was going to be a whole lot of work, so I decided I needed to figure out a way to make it pay, and that's why I started looking for something, and I decided, oh, hey, the stock market appears to run on emotion, not any kind of rational logic at all, and was basically worse than any casino I'd ever seen. So therefore, it seemed logical that the thing to do was to use the ability of the software I'd written over the course of many years to predict shifts in the stock market based on how the language would change around it. However, I got derailed the first time I ran the program and never looked back. So, so that boat sailed, and I kind of waved at it as it went away.
Well, I'm glad it did. So you know, you've from what I see here and from what I've read, as I said, as Robert said, I mean, he's more the expert on you, I guess I would say. But from what I've seen and what I've heard, it just sounds fascinating to me.
I mean, it's a fascinating process, and it opens up some really fantastic noodles, I call them, or gnawing on universe. Just the mere idea that we can, at a collective level, forecast the future seemingly with a greater than level of chance would allow, greater level of accuracy than chance should allow, and we can do this at three or four different levels of future prognostication, it makes me want to re-examine how the whole universe is put together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that makes – yes. Well, we just aren't aware of so much of what goes on. And as you see here, I mean, as you get, the subconscious or unconscious things that we say and do, you know, that to me is just as much or more than what we actually say and why we think we're saying it.
Correct. And in fact, you know, the psychologists and all these people will tell you 62% or something of all communication is nonverbal, face-to-face. Mm-hmm. And what I'm actually looking at is sort of the other side of that, is the hidden level of the linguistics, where we know, now just consider this, we are an organism that was designed for tribal life. We should only be able to, or only demanded in a tribal setting of dealing with maybe 145 individuals in our whole lifetime. And therefore our brains are structured to store data about people at that level, and also to communicate with them at a level where we maybe frequently could not use words. You know, predators are around, you have to be silent, enemies, right, this kind of thing. So our whole communication structure is focused on most of it being visual. And we have sort of, as a technological species, twisted the visual part into reading and writing when the saccadic movements really go to support hunting for prey and hunting, gathering, and also not becoming prey. And in any event, we've sort of twisted our psychology and our biology to suit our technical way of life. And I was willing to bet, because of the way universe is structured in my view, that it was working secretly behind our backs, so to speak, to bring out what we really need, which is that 68% of communication that is lost, because most of our communication now is not face-to-face, and we don't have that body language. That component is missing. So I was willing to bet that we were going to expand our vocabularies and change our way of dealing with speech totally to get that through, and it sure worked out that way. I think I've sort of tapped onto that.
Hmm. Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, it's your work has certainly been eye-opening for me. I want to kind of just jump right into the reports and
sure,
whatnot, because I know a lot of our listeners are, you know, probably interested in that. And I wanted to bring up one thing that we noticed very recently. The two earthquakes, for example, in the one in Virginia, then, you know, we had the one very recently in Oklahoma. And I remember hearing, I don't know if it was that I read it in one of the, I think I read it in one of the reports, but I think I heard about it too, that there were, you made a reference to a quake central in the U.S. or somewhere in a dividing area of the U.S., and it kind of made me think about that, and I just wanted to get your take on that.
There's some strange things going on with earthquakes. Mm-hmm. The way our data is structured, we actually get language that suggests earthquakes due to the way that the archetypes are filled with the primary, secondary, and tertiary supporting layers of linguistics and those that lead down to detail. So if someone were, for instance, to use a nuclear bomb or an energy weapon to initiate an earthquake, it would not show up in our data under earthquake except in a minor fashion, because of the way the archetype would be constructed, we'd actually find that it was more likely going to show up in our unknown category, and from there on it would go down into detail. So at this point, there are some signature patterns that are missing in a lot of the earthquakes there are a lot of ground motions recently, and I'm hesitant to say that some of them are natural earthquakes, specifically things like Fukushima, where the earthquake itself event was preceded by several days of heating both of the ocean and the ionosphere over the area, and then there was no pre-initialization of the P or the S wave. It just was suddenly bang, and then it trailed off, unlike every other earthquake that had occurred. So in the future now, we have to start examining these tracery records before we say, okay, this is an earthquake. And there's the rub. Now I've got to add another layer of detail to our processing in order, since someone's out there apparently trying to create them, to try and also be able to capture that level of the earthquakes.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, I've noticed that the earthquakes that have been happening, it seems that, you know, the reports of where they're noticed or felt, they seem completely different than what you would call, you know, your normal earthquakes. And also noticed you not using the word earthquakes, and you called it ground movement, and I find that very interesting as well.
We've got to now be careful because bear in mind we're linguists here, and it drives my wife crazy frequently because we parse words, but we want to get down to a definitive level of understanding. And here's part of our problem. We are actually in our work attempting to try and stay ahead of what we think of as the expando planet model, where all this energy coming in from the sun is causing the Earth to expand. And therefore, there are going to be ground movements that may not be earthquakes as we understand them. And I would expect them to have different signatures. Some of these we were able to forecast, like the sudden blossoming, if you will, of sinkholes around the planet in the last 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've been forecasting those since, probably 2001 internally, and maybe we started writing about them in early 2003, something like that, in some detail in 2005, because the sinkholes and the ground movements and the tears in the Earth were all showing up in separate linguistic structures from the actual earthquakes. And to a certain extent, earthquakes are really a minor problem. They rarely kill people. It's usually bad engineering that kills people.
Well, that's right.
You know, a sinkhole can grab your truck while you're going down the freeway.
Right.
So that will really ruin your day.
Yeah, that tends to do that. Yes.
but if you're out in the middle of the open field, as perhaps we were meant to be, as you mentioned in that tribal way, if you're out in the middle of an open field, the odds of dying in an earthquake are pretty slim, I'd say.
They are indeed. You almost have to literally fall into the fissure.
Yeah. Or be under a really large tree that just happens to keel over. Yeah.
Trees, by the way, in earthquakes have a tendency to simply raise up and down with their branches. They don't weave side to side like in wind. So trees rarely come down in earthquakes, but you may find vast quantities of heavy branches that fall.
Yes. Yeah. And those most likely were the ones that needed to fall anyway.
And it seems these earthquakes, you know, like the one in Oklahoma and Virginia and others have been in areas where they don't build for this kind of thing. You know, this is completely...
That's going to be the really nasty part of all of this. If we're correct about the expansion of the Earth, then what happens is that the very first time that the Earth expanded, when it was, say, 60% smaller in volume, the crust ruptured in these rifts that later became the mountain chains we know as the Rockies, Andes, and the Himalayas, and as well as the Caucasus Mountains. As the Earth grows, a bulge occurs in the equator due to the centrifugal force and other factors affecting that. But as the planet expands over time, the relative size of the equatorial bulge also grows. So way back when, the equatorial bulge was maybe 1 degree of arc, whereas now it's about 60 degrees of arc, and it's expanding even further. So those areas from 30 degrees north and 30 degrees south latitudes up to, say, the 35s to 38s would be the area I would expect to see the inroads of the new expansion. And those latitudes would be these areas where people had just not built for earthquakes. And what we're going to start seeing there is not earthquakes like California or other, even up here in the Pacific Northwest, where they're bouncing all the time due to volcanoes and magma and so forth.
Right.
But rather, what we're going to see in the expansion event, Earth movements, are going to be what we call earthquakes, and these will occur due to long fissures and ruptures as the mantle and the crust accommodates the new matter in the middle of the planet. So they'll be very violent, have a tendency to be very sharp, but they should throw a standard P and S wave precursors, unlike what we saw in Fukushima. Plus, Fukushima was not in any of the areas that we expect the expansion to occur. It should have had ripping.
Well, and you know, like for example, you mentioned the ripping. There's that fault in the ground. Well, I don't even really want to call it a fault. I guess rip is a better word. In Michigan, I believe, yes. You know, and that seemed to happen right around the time they had that unexpected quake in Ontario or Quebec. I don't remember which it was.
And we've also got rips that are now gigantic in Ethiopia, new ones that where Baja connects to the mainland, ripping up into California. There's also a new rip that's starting to show, and I'm got to be clear, I think it's on the New Mexico side of the border there, the New Mexico-Arizona.
The Baja area?
No, there's a whole new one that's going to form in the middle of the Four Corners area and head on up towards Nevada. Maybe it wants to go, you know, Vegas, see a show or something. But it's on its way. So even that area is going to start showing expansion events, sinkholes, and all this other business.
Wow. Yeah, it is just amazing all that's going on, seriously. I mean,
we also have to look all the way around the planet. We see what's happening on the other side. Those areas that have already been pulverized by the previous expansions of the Earth, like Thailand, are now flattening out, and thus the sea level relative to them is rising. It doesn't mean the sea level is rising globally. It means that because the arc is flattening, the ground upon which they were set is also flattening, which in essence reduces their level relative to their nearby ocean. And so they're going to have permanent flooding issues.
You know, speaking of that those floods that you were mentioning in Asia, you know, I read somewhere, I know you've been talking about shortages for quite some time, different fields of shortages, but you know, I read a report that area that was under so much water was responsible for making a large portion of the world's hard drives, for example, and that getting a hold of, you know, the hard drives are getting very hard to come by, and the prices have shot way up, and it's those kind of things. Like, I mean, you know, people think, oh, that's in, you know, that's over in Asia, that doesn't affect us, but those things have immediate effects on everybody. We just don't realize it sometimes, how interconnected that kind of thing is.
Right. We've actually become globalized at the insistence of the powers that be. It's a good thing for all of humanity to be globalized. We just need to take it on our own as to how it's going to be organized. But unfortunately, it brings this level of dependency. Now, Buckminster Fuller, for instance, in the 1930s, he knew that globalization was coming, and so he sat down between like 1930 and 1935 and thought about it. And he thought about a way of bringing it about so it was entirely decentralized, with the idea being that should there be flooding in Thailand, you could instantly shift your production to other areas. And also, by the way, route needed supplies to Thailand with no drain on the rest of the planetary resources. And the way that he did this was a genius to begin with. He decided that the best way to do this would be to electrify the planet around our coastline into one common giant electrical grid into which we would all throw electricity. And we could do it in such a way that it would reduce our electrical costs in the 30s, in those numbers, to 1/16 of what they were at that time. Wow. And it would be so super redundant that it would be basically like the internet and could not fail in mass. It could fail in sections, but it would be easily recoverable. And yet you could always upgrade it because you could always isolate the individual sections, replace them, and just bring them back online with new equipment.
But the flaw there is you couldn't create a shortage or monopolize that. So
I know
that's not going to work.
That won't ever happen.
By that much. Yep. Yep.
If we can't monopolize it and take advantage of it and make oodles of money off of it, then it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And see, that's what I dispute. And that, unfortunately, even though we say it in jest and we're being facetious about it, it
sort of
brings in exactly. But it brings in neurolinguistic programming on a self-fulfilling level, and so we would never fight to secure that because in our brains we've been told that it won't occur. And so, you know, I hate to be a nasty preacher kind of guy about this, but I always come back to the words and say, no, I don't actually think that that's the case. I know it's worthwhile trying to achieve this level of elevation of omni-humanity, and the only way we're going to get any kind of a justice on this planet is if we're all personally sovereign, and yet and then all throw in together as we choose, not at the direction of the power brokers. It
yes.
sounds idealistic, but it can indeed be done. And people like Buckminster Fuller had thought about this very soundly, and he had some very interesting ideas. He said you could bring about, end war and bring about an equitable reform of all economic systems with one single act that would ripple through the planet for about 100 years, but it would do most of its work in the first 30 years, and that would be to set all currencies relative to a machinist wage in that country, and then set all machinist wage to be the same relative to gold.
Wow.
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 Yeah, by the way, I just want to add here, it sounds like some people are having trouble listening. If you can't get, well, our site is up, but the play button is not responding, so we'll have to check with the network on that. But you can go to bbsradio.com, listen to us there, channel 1, if you're having any trouble. But our site is keeping up with it. You're a popular guy, Cliff.
I know. I don't know why, and I think my wife wonders as well, you know.
You know what seems very interesting to me from what you've – just a little bit that you've said so far is how it all goes kind of what I say every day, kind of what I, well, preach, not preach in church, but preach is that, you know, we are such tiny parts of this planet and we are so insignificant in some ways. But it's very interesting to me how you've put together that we actually – you know, do matter. I mean, in that, we define our own, I guess what I'm saying is, our energy, our words do make a big difference. And I mean by that, what we say.
They truly do. Expression, yeah. Yes. Because
yes.
it all goes to intent. Now,
yes.
I can't take credit for any of this because I was a bumbling fool for most of my life, and then I fell into Aikido. And I studied and continue to study Aikido and have done so for 30 years or more or less.
Right.
And it is within that discipline that many of these thoughts arise. Not to say it's restricted to that discipline, because you find
right.
it in yoga, karate, qigong,
well, I
squash,
do Reiki,
who knows,
and
you know.
I do Reiki, and I was
yep.
thinking the same thing, that it makes sense within the framework that I use. You know, the energy making a huge difference, and as you pointed out, what we say, you know, if we put out at that intention that, no, this can't ever happen, then of course it's not going to.
Correct. And so it becomes self-fulfilling, and you've really got to
yes.
watch that, because the powers that be
right.
train you to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you that way, and they want to have all these preloaded triggers that they can snap off all of these tricks in order to get vast quantities of people to behave as they wish. And they're very irritated when we don't. So I figure, this is something we can do, and it doesn't cost much. Just simply not behave as they would expect, and paying attention to their language. And so Aikido teaches you confrontation tactics, because all of life is confrontation, which is basically another way of also saying exploration. So when I'm going to confront with someone, it need not involve a negative emotion on my part at all. All it really is an exploration of that being's intent towards me and my reconciliation of my intent back towards it, and how I
yes.
how we're all going to interact here. And so
mm-hmm.
It even gets back into a lot of the stuff that we see in our data, and we've noticed a shift occurring in, for lack of a better word, awareness or a general consciousness that we first started tracking in 1997. And it's continuing to grow. We're seeing greater and greater exploration of this self-awareness, this sovereignty. And as we go further, we will eventually break through some kind of a barrier. And then we will be able to say to ourselves, we can no longer refer to these things even jokingly, because now the opportunity is right in front of us. We better get to work.
You are so right. You are so
right. So let's think about it. What are we going to do?
You're right.
Yeah.
I hear so many people that will say to you, jokingly most of the time, I know they mean it deep down, but, oh, you know, I'll never be able to do that, and you know, I'll never make any more than I am now, or my job's horrible, or whatever, or I'm a failure, or, you know, I'll never lose weight, whatever. And you know that affects. I mean, that totally affects whether you're able to do it. You put that energy
yeah.
out there that I'm not really going to do this, and so you don't.
Yeah, exactly. You teach yourself. And you even more so, you burn in these pathways into your brain. And it, I think of them as like those little pachinko pinball game kind of things laid over on their side. Once you've got those little pathways burned in, the your little mental ball of consciousness wants to roll in them because it's the path of least resistance.
Right.
So I always examine my own language and my own internal dialogue, and it's something I've started doing. I started doing, like I say, about 30 years ago and getting into Aikido very seriously. But insofar as the failure and all of that business, I have no degrees. I have no college degrees. I don't pretend to be anything other than an old bald guy living in the woods that gnaws on universe occasionally. But if you look at this, the most interesting people that we have are the misfits. They're the ones that are out there very thinking true. That at some point in their lives, they think themselves failures, the freaks, these, you know, outside of everything. And yet, these are the individuals throughout history that are there when the social order needs them with that interesting bit of thought. What we have to do now, though, is we've got a strange situation where for the past 45 years at least, if not longer, the powers that be have been flooding the consciousness with negative impression words that are tending to stifle a lot of what humanity is capable of. And if you look, how often do you read any more in any publication, periodical, anything exhorting humans to be better than they are at an individual level?
You are so right on that. That is so true.
You just don't see it at a national level. All it is negative, 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 be afraid.
Terribly sorry.
you can make yourself totally depressed just going on websites and reading the news. And you are so right when I think about it, all those, you know, I wonder sometimes, I mean, I know better than to do it, but I used to go online and read some of the news, and I would just come away feeling like, well, it really doesn't matter what I do. And as you point out, with the words that are used, how would anybody feel anything else unless you knew that was the goal?
Correct. And you've got to be very careful about this because emotions are where power comes for mm-hmm. humans.
Absolutely.
I hate to do this. We have to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to talk about today's events and the Israeli mistake. We have a few other things to talk about. Looks like they're beating those drums kind of hard. But we'll be back here in just a minute, and we'll have more of Cliff High.
Reiki is a Japanese relaxation technique that promotes healing and balance. It is a form of energy work that helps unblock areas that are affected by illness, stress, grief, anxiety, or other types of trauma, and it can be given in person or from the Reiki practitioner to the recipient at a distance. It is gentle and soothing and is simple to learn as well. Our bodies have the natural ability to maintain health and heal themselves when energy flows smoothly throughout our energy system. And Reiki works well either by itself or along with traditional or alternative medical treatments to help keep energy channels flowing and the mind and body in balance. I offer Reiki, the Ho Chi, and other types of energy sessions in my home in Florence, Alabama, as well as distance Reiki to any location in the world. I also teach Reiki classes from levels 1 through Karuna Reiki Master, as well as the Ho Chi. To learn more, please visit alabamareiki.com. That's AlabamaReiki.com.
Want to start a website but don't know how? No problem. The experts at OCS Solutions have you covered. We offer a complete range of internet services, from domain name registration, web hosting, and even our easy-to-use website building tool that allows you to create a website with just a few clicks and be live in minutes. Pick from thousands of templates and samples, upload your own content, or use a mix of both. It's entirely up to you. And don't worry, you won't outgrow OCS. We host websites both small and large. Domain names start at just $8 a year and come loaded with plenty of extras to get you started. Visit OCSDomains.com to learn more or call 1-800-672-8415. That's OCSDomains.com or call 1-800-672-8415.
And hi, we're WAC at Well-Rounded Corners. We've got Cliff High with us. Very, very fortunate to have him on. And Cliff, I wanted to ask you about some of today's events. I know today was starting of a big time period in your reports. November 8th, I believe, was that the start?
Yeah, we have had November 8th pegged for 22 hours of release language. If we were in error, it could maybe be as long as 3 days, but it seems to be on track so far for the 22 hours. And at this point, it all seems to be focused on the language coming out of the Western media about Iran. I don't see it showing up in Russian media other than in response to the Western media. Same thing with China, what little I'm able to get at. So the release language appears to have been triggered at that point that we first started hearing. The escalation took place at about basically noon today, West Coast time.
Now, just for someone like myself who may not totally realize what you're saying, the release language, did you say?
Oh, sorry about that. When I started out, the way I proceeded was I had an Oxford English Dictionary with 300,000 words that had all the definitions stripped off, and that was a giant database that got me started. And so I went through each word, and I decided if it was a contributor to building tension language or release language. Release language, this is something I learned in the dojo, was watching, analyzing people as they did training and the language they would use and how their body was in motion and so forth. And so building tension language puts tension in the upper body, makes you breathe up in the upper chest. Mm-hmm. Release language brings everything down into the abdomen. You know, good or bad, it's not good or, I mean, there's no negative or positive associated with it. It's just two different kinds of language. And then I started breaking down all the language from there. So release language is just emotionally expressive, whereas building tension is more anxiety or emotionally intensive, where you're not yet ready to express that emotion. You're building it in your body. Make sense?
Yes. Perfect sense. Thank you.
Okay, so for about 22 hours, we were going to have a collective gigantic, which really means watered down, because it's the aggregate of all of us, release language and these period. And what we do is we track how language goes from building tension to release language back and forth over the days, and have been doing so since 97 pretty much continuously. And so I've gotten fairly good at picking when we go into it. There's always the error as to how long it will last, because events have a way of changing. And there's one thing we know for sure, that every time we look at the future in our work, it changes probably because we're looking at it.
Now, the quantum observance.
Yes.
Correct.
Very interesting. Yes, that's very interesting too.
So in regards to the Israeli mistake, which is the mistake that you forecasted, Israel attacking Iran or something like that and getting, I guess, more than they bargained for.
Correct. Let's be real clear about this, because the events have altered over time from when we forecast this way back in 2004. The original language structure faded in, I think, probably 2008 or 2009, and we started moving into where we're at now.
You know, it's funny, on a previous interview, you said that you felt that the time that Israel could do anything about it, about Iran, you know, getting nuclear weapons, was the window was about to close. And then it seems like about a week after you said that, somebody in the media said that. And then all of a sudden, I guess, I don't know if it's because things didn't go well for him in Libya or something, but it seems like there's a huge resurgence of this language. And, you know, all of a sudden Israel's pumping its chest and saying, we're going to attack Iran and everything. And it's very ironic. I mean, it's almost like they're listening to you.
you know. But let's also stop and look at your language here. You're saying all of a sudden, but what you're really trying to express, I think, is the out of the blue, the surprise component of it.
Right, yeah.
Okay, it was out of the blue from our perspective, because we're not privy to what's going on behind the scenes. However, somebody probably 5 months ago decided that now would be the time that they would start doing the lead-in to this, because as we have maintained, and I think we even wrote about it with George Ure, maybe 2006 or 2007, the Israelis would never be unleashed on Iran until after the economic collapse. The logic being that the Israelis attacking Iran would doom the dollar instantly, and therefore they could not be allowed to attack until the dollar was pretty much toast.
So that kind of gives us...
That gives you the temporal markers and everything. Except now the mistake component had changed. The last time we ran the data, the mistake was that they were going to try a surprise attack, and the Iranians would be aware of it, would wipe out half of the attacking forces on the way in, and would cause horrific levels of damage to the Israeli homeland. All within a matter of minutes and so on, because of they basically know it's coming. They're not idiots.
Mm-hmm.
And they know they've seen this whole progression before. Now, and then we had a mistake component that discusses the level of noncompliance within the Israeli populace, both active and aware, and also subconsciously. And they're going to get into a situation where they're going to have, unheard of for them, a level of breakdown in their military component that is going to seriously impact their ability to do anything relative to a large-scale attack. And we were seeing it in more openly with the 500,000 people, you know, in the Tel Aviv marching against the Zionist agenda, more or less, and other issues there. But now we've got a lot of the original long-term language that we had discussed in 2007 or something showing up with the language coming out of the Russians. Whether they are doing this deliberately as an echo of what had been on the net for a long time, because it had been discussed for about 5 years, or whether this is simply a spontaneous use of that same language set by Universe, I can't say. But nonetheless, I think it's going to have the intended effect. And that is that maybe, once again, they may be able to derail the Israeli attack on Iran. It should be fairly easy to actually get that to not occur. But here's our problem. And that is, by our, I mean those people that live within the American empire. The dollar is dying. The Federal Reserve criminal syndicate is going away. They know it's all dying. All the minions are running scared. By minions, I mean all the political class. It doesn't matter, Republican or Democrat. They're all culpable criminals. They're all running scared because they can't have all of these secrets coming on out as the system collapses. Yet it's collapsing. So what they were going to do was to distract us. Their intent was to have a big war that would get us all whipped up with false patriotism over some imagined affront from somebody. Oh, the horror of some Iranian having a nuclear bomb. Oh, the terror.
It doesn't take much to
Israel's got 300 of them, you know? So, you know, I'm much more afraid of Israel nuking New York than I am Iran nuking Brussels. And I'll tell you why. Because Israel would easily, the Zionists in control of that government, would easily nuke New York, wipe out the whole thing if they thought it would achieve their ends. Whereas I know the Iranians would never attack precipitously do a first strike on any group. They would be totally brutal if they were attacked. Let's not be naive about it. But everybody, let me just say that it's fairly obvious if you're aware in the United States that our Department of Defense is really a warmongering machine. The Department of Education is really a school system that schools people and does not educate them. And you can go on and on and on. The Federal Reserve Bank is not a part of the federal government, has no reserves, and is not a bank. So all of the language we use in our society is backwards. So when they say a radical cleric so-and-so in the... some Islamic country, I always turn it back on them and say the radical cleric, you know, Jimmy Swaggart, or the radical cleric, licentious whoremonger Jimmy Swaggart, and use the actual language that is appropriate. But here's what we have to be aware of. Our government and our media, as a tool of the government, will use words like, we're afraid of a preemptive strike. Well, you know that right there is they're saying we are going to make a preemptive strike, because no one on this planet has ever made preemptive strikes other than us, except for when we've engineered for the Japanese to do it to Pearl Harbor the way that we engineered for the supposed Arab contingent to do it to the trade towers.
Oh, yes.
The, yeah. So we do preemptive strikes. No one else does. So the idea that Iran would have a preemptive strike, it doesn't seem feasible. That Israel would, sure, no question, because they're
well, they've done it with Lebanon and Gaza.
Yeah.
And, absolutely. So, you just have to go by history. I mean...
not history. Yesterday.
True.
Recent history.
There we go. So that's where we are now. Now, the language shows that the Russians are very much aware of the state of mind and are very good players at the great game in terms of how they delivered that language. And I await the next move. Because basically at this point, the Russians have made two statements publicly, and they've let leak that they've made several statements privately, and that they apparently have actually gone to the trouble of one-on-one making the statement of how severe the mistake might be to the Israelis face-to-face. So that has escalated the whole game here, and it may also have been a point at which they could have said, hey, by the way, we know that you're going to fire up your planes on this day. We've seen the fuel deliveries on this day. That we've got you pegged on the satellites. And oh, by the way, we've just made sure the Iranians are aware of this and so on. And that we're just not going to have this. If that is the case, if we're going to get into what I call the assertion phase, as general language changes, we go from one large archetype to another. So we're fading in now to a giant archetype that we called Secrets Revealed that should last for a couple of years. And as that fades out, we're going to go into this assertion phase in which the people of the planet will assert themselves and say how we want to rule. That we're not going to let these supposed leaders dictate things anymore. And that assertion phase arises during the Secrets Revealed phase, and probably a lot of it will come directly as these secrets are revealed. People will get really more and more irritated at having been deceived so long. And so they become much more assertive in saying this crud just isn't going to happen anymore.
Well, let me see if I've got the order right. So you said that the Israeli mistake was tied to or related to the death of the dollar or the start of that, and that so they weren't going to go ahead and do that until then. Does that – I mean, I guess we've already established that kind of signals both of these events are near or close to being – okay.
The dollar is indeed the whole financial system, let's just put it that way. The central bank and warfare model, business model that's been imposed on our planet by the American and Anglo Empire is in the process of dying, and we're seeing that all around us. The question of will it die by next Thursday or will it die by March the 12th is kind of moot because it's in the process of dying and it's going to impact us all individually as we go forward. Some people are going to feel its death next Wednesday when they get laid off. And other people, it might be another 2.5 or 3 months when they can't buy gasoline because it's not available because the dollar is not accepted by gasoline producing countries and so on and so on. The ripples are going to be quite severe for a long time. But they're overcomable. I mean, it's a terrible evil system. Paper money has always died on this planet. And the fact that the dollar lasted this long has been only through mega deaths of huge levels of population. And anybody that says we went into Iraq to liberate anything other than oil is misguided. And we did so at the cost of 2 million dead Iraqis. So every single drop of oil it's blood money. And this can't go on. We're at the end of this cycle.
Yeah, it's astonishing. I mean, when you look at a country like Iran, now, I mean, I'm not aware of all the situations in regards to that, but I just don't see them posturing, like I see other countries around there posturing, and I'm not naming names, but I think everybody knows who I'm talking about. I mean, it just seems to me that if you're going to, the way to peace, if you're a nation that quote unquote wants peace, then preemptive strikes and all this stuff, that's just not the way to go about it. I mean, I think we all know that intrinsically, and it amazes me that we put up with that.
We let it slide, yeah.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I don't, and I've gotten old and cranky, and I just don't care anymore. So I'm a danger to people around me. But, at some point, you got to stand up and say, this is absolute bogus. I'm just not going to tolerate it. And know the language. Like, you hear this repeated constantly because the Zionist press wants you to think this. They say Ahmadinejad is calling for the destruction of Israel. And that is a bogus translation and transliteration of what he said. He said that the Zionist state had no legal authority to exist and dominate the people of Israel, and Zionism should be destroyed as a philosophy. And that's his exact words.
Yeah.
He didn't call for the destruction of anything.
Yeah, some people in the... In the chat room,
language there.
Some people are wondering if they heard your dog in the background, but I think that's confirmed. I was wondering. I'm also seeing some people asking about the euro versus the dollar. You know, it when you mentioned the dollar death, I mean, is that specifically tied to the euro collapsing as well, or is that
actually the euro? I lived in Europe when they started the whole European community, and they started their. Attempt to dominate the so hang on a second. Misha, no guy. It's okay. Thank you. So anyway, no, the euro's got to go too, simply because it was a construct that went against the actual flow of time. If you know, the social organization all around us for like the last 30 years, especially now that the internet's really taken off, has been the idea that we're going to be self-organizing, we can align ourselves with who we want, we don't have to be affiliated with a particular city. This is just a trivial example. If you happen to like a particular sports team in another city, you can get all of the action and see it all, and then you can have your emotions on that sports team, and you don't have to care about the one you're with, especially since we're a huge mobile population and we move around a lot. So the European community, which led to the European Union, which led to the euro, was actually working against the natural needs of the populace there, which was to bust up a lot, because a lot of the European structure, geopolitically, had been imposed on them by some form of dictatorial empire for the last 400 or 500 years. So you had, for instance, the Serbo-Croatian state, where the Serbs didn't like the Croats. You had the Czechoslovakian Republic, and they didn't want to live together anymore. And so those kind of things were actually emerging in the 60s, and yet the powers that be quashed them with this idea that they would have three or four gigantic mega-states on the planet against the wishes of the people. And yet, basically, it's the same thing with our data. At some point, subconsciously, it's not working, and we all know it, and we're gradually moving away from it. The alternatives are not good, but we apparently do wish them.
Well, and like you said in the beginning, you know, we were originally a tribal people. It just goes against our grain, it seems to me, to be organized that largely. I mean, it doesn't, you don't see the Aborigines. I mean, for example, I saw the Aborigines.
Okay, let's be real clear about that, too, because that's not quite true. The Aboriginal and also tribal cultures have been known to have amassed huge levels of populations and have been self-organizing collectives at staggering levels that we can't even imagine today. The estimates are that in one region of the United States, there was a nation composed of tribes that numbered over 50 million individuals at its peak. And this was actually through the Central Valleys, the mound builders that go all the way up into Canada and came all the way down into the Mississippi. And that area, there's no sign of any central authority, yet there's all kinds of signs of huge levels of constructions and sharing of food, north and south, species that shouldn't be around. So obviously there was trade and so on. So Aboriginal peoples do indeed grow to very large, sophisticated collectives. They just don't have central authority.
Well, right. And they would come together for specific purposes instead of just, let's just come together for just no reason. Instead, it was we need to build this, or we need to accomplish this, or defend against that, or something, is what I'm hearing.
And to me, my own observation seems to be that, you know, if people to come together for a common cause, I mean, if we come together to hunt or to make our food or to care for our children, there's a spirit of cooperation. We get to know each other. We all know our role in the society. But the way it seems to me now in our huge societies, you've got people who want to run everything. You've got so many people crushed together in such small spaces. And there's not that that compassion in a way, and it's not a reflection on who the person is inside. It's that you don't get to know your role. You don't get to know your neighbor. You don't get to form the bonds that would help you go hunting together and all share it.
There's more to it than that. It's not an organic thing. We need to be aware that that very core thing you're speaking to, that dehumanization, is been put upon us. And we can actually focus certain levels of our awareness on it, and we learn that what's going on is the powers that be are trying through language and every other thing they can do, from the structure of our buildings, our roads, our transportation systems, to get our reptilian brains to work and keep our consciousness as closely focused on the what's known as the R complex as they possibly can.
Because they're doing an excellent job.
And that's where you feel dehumanized, because when you think about it, you know, when you're traumatized and a hurricane has just swept over you, or a tornado has lifted you up and thrown you 80 yards into the tree, you're back in that fight, flight, or frozen in fear, and you don't feel very human. You're not very magnanimous, very courageous, etc. But you need not face any of those obstacles trapped in that reptilian brain, but they're sure pushing on us.
Mm-hmm.
But it only takes awareness to bust out of it. It's the easiest of all of their traps to overcome. You have to keep fighting it for some time because they're very insidious, and there's a tendency to backslide. You can overcome that part fairly easily on an individual level. And I actually think that's what's going on. I think there's a huge level of us that are not willing to live that way anymore.
I agree.
And we're going to just be regular old humans, live outside of the reptilian mind, and the whole world the universe is just staggeringly wonderful at that stage. And we can, like I say, we can go on to exhort ourselves to greater and greater things. Mm-hmm. You know, as an aside there, if you really want to see the difference in language, go and read the daily newspapers, which are now becoming available in digital forms, from virtually any city, in a major city in the Northern Hemisphere, and I'm talking virtually any language, in the 1800s, prior to about 1850. Prior to that time, there are people that will dispute it and say, oh, it was the great age of exploration, tailing down, and all of this. And I say no. I say that what occurred was that masonry reared its ugly head and took over our communication system by taking over newspapers and putting in negative-minded people that use negative-minded words. But prior to that period of time, the level of language, it was a joy to read because of what it was exhorting humans to be. There was a whole new world emerging to us. And now, look, because of our language, because of no other single thing, we've abandoned the space effort of the United States. We've not lost any titanium out of our ground. We've not lost any potential rocket fuel. We can go back, but we've decided linguistically we're not going to, and therefore we've canceled it all.
Yes.
And Cliff, we just have a few more minutes. I just wanted to ask you, wanted to get to this. You've mentioned several in the last report and several interviews about the Ice Age and the rough winter that we're going to be having. We've already seen that, really. We've already seen that take place. It's been abnormally cold, abnormally early for much of the U.S. So is there any more details you can give us about that before we have to wrap it up here?
No, I don't have any detail on that yet because we're just in the early stages of the next run, and the Terra entity is the largest one, and I normally do it about two-thirds of the way through. So I don't have any new data that coming from our stuff. However, I do know from the size of the Terra entity buffers already that there's going to be quite a bit to chew on. So it wouldn't surprise me to find that we're going to get confirmation that this whole winter is going to be a lot worse than we'd even imagine. But there's also something else going on with the sun. I've got a special ticker for it, and the collection point in the database is very large there, abnormally so, even over the last run. I think we're up about 8% in the amount we're getting this early. So probably it relates to, you know, the sun disease, as I call it.
Right. Mm. And so in regards to the release language just wrapping up here the next few days, anything else you can tell us about that? Just you know, it looks like it's going to be a wild week for sure. Just any final words about that?
I suspect that the powers that be are in a real bind, and if they can't get the Iranian war going, they're going to have to do something else. They will be driven by desperation at individual levels throughout the entire hierarchy to collaborate on something else to try and distract us, just the way that the 9/11 attacks coming on that Tuesday were to prevent the largest single market meltdown we've seen in decades.
Right.
And they did so. Well, they've got that same situation coming up. The dollar and everything is going to die. They just are attempting to manage it. So I'm saying watch out for mind games over these next 2 weeks. I'm not trusting anything I hear coming out of media, even more so than usual.
Yeah. That's a shame. Quick.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I just wanted to get one real quick last question. And, people are talking about the 22 hours of release language. Just wanted to ask you if you had any words on that. I mean, when is that supposed to start? Or
It started about, let's see, probably about, it was 2 o'clock something, 2:30 our time this afternoon. So, you know, it's out there, and we're picking it up in the mainstream media with their references to the nuclear issues in Iran, but also the biggest release component of it today was 8.5 minutes on the national news on NBC devoted to the pedophilia at some college back east and how it affected, the horror of it all, football. And
yes, that was interesting.
The fact that they devoted so much time to that, yet they never mentioned at all, I've never seen any of the major media mention the horrific investigations ongoing in British Columbia now to determine exactly how many indigenous population children were raped and murdered by the Catholic Church over these last century. It may be in the hundreds of thousands. There's just no way of knowing. Half of all indigenous people put in the hands of the orphanage system run by the Catholics and the Anglicans disappeared. Half. 50% mortality. Killed.
Yeah, that's
by,
horrendous.
Yes. So, and yet you don't see the media mentioning it, but no, you know, they've got a lot of release language about football.
Yeah, that's always important. And I'm jesting again. Shouldn't say that.
Well, but see, there you go. Look.
Yeah, I fell into it again.
No, but football actually also puts you back into reptilian mode. It triggers the
warlike. He doesn't even like football.
Us against them, right.
So the question I have is, I saw something about the data wall stopping in 2013.
Correct.
Can you?
As far as I can tell, I think that what we're expecting is some very large solar eruption that will pretty much take back technological society for some period of time.
Wow.
We think it'll hit before May of 2013. It's most likely to start occurring March of next year.
And there's nothing past that. That's from your data, right?
I have to get really technical to explain why we have some small glimpses past that from previous reports, but we're not getting much now because we're being overwhelmed by the immediacy data. So there is some large something out there that is collectively tweaking all of our psychic hairs.
Well, I would agree with
that's for sure.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Well, we have to go. We're right at the end. And Cliff, I wish we had 3 more hours.
at least.
I'm glad we don't. I got to get to sleep.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on. You know, your work and expertise is just – it's been an inspiration to many. Definitely appreciate having you on. Look to have you on again as soon as possible.
I've got some work coming up, so it'll be a while, but yeah.
And Cliff, tell people how to get to your site, or how do you get to your
website? I don't, you know, a universal directive, but I'm at halfpasthuman.com. There's a bunch of free stuff there, and you can read stuff. And if you're in desperate straits there, or if the money is, you know, if that $10 for the report is meaningful, don't send it to us. Let us send you a free copy.
Absolutely. That's one.
Well, that's wonderful.
Can't be done. Okay, well, I'd like to remind listeners you can catch our show every other Tuesday, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific time on VBS Radio Station 1. We'll have this up within 48 hours. We'll try to get it up tomorrow. On our website, you can listen to it there. Please feel free to share the copy of the entire recording as much as possible. We want to give it to everybody. And Cliff, thank you for being here.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Guys. Yeah,
it's been great.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
And thank you for joining us this evening, and
okay. We
have totally enjoyed it, and we thank you, and we will see you next time.
Absolutely. Good night.